Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We are today in lesson 43, and we are in Matthew 15 and verse 14, where after the statement that Jesus Christ made about let the blind, you know, that is the blind leaders, let the leaders of the blind lead the blind and so forth, because they're all going to fall into the same ditch, a reality that is happening to this very day. In other words, as God said through Jeremiah, cursed be the man that puts his trust in man. If you're going to put your trust in man and you're going to follow him without proving all things and checking up on him from the word of God, so that Jesus Christ and God himself may tell you exactly, and his disciples and writers, you see, and lawgivers and servants may tell you exactly what is on the mind of God and what he said, in contrast to what the leader is saying to you. Now, if it is the same, fine. You can follow the leader, as Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. You see? And unless you know what Christ said, what God said, how would you know whether that leader is following Christ? See? And so what do you put your trust in a person like that, that you didn't check out to find out, you know, whether that person is speaking the truth? And that's what Christ said. My sheep know my voice. If you're really the sheep of Christ, you're going to know his voice. How would you know his voice? Because you're constantly reading it, proving it, studying it, day and night. And therefore he says, others are not going to follow. If they hear other voices, they're not going to follow them, they're going to flee from them. So the only way that you can be of the flock, you see, of Jesus Christ, of his sheep, is if you follow him. Understand his word, know his word, so nobody can deceive you. So when somebody else comes, if it is your leader, your church, your, you know, whatever that you put your trust in, comes and says something that is different than what the word of God says, you are not going to follow him. You are not going to listen to what he says. You see, nobody wants to follow a liar. And that's what he's saying here. They're blind people. You know, their eyes are not open, obviously, otherwise they wouldn't be liars, they wouldn't be blind, they would not be misleading others. But he said they're basically blind because God concluded them in blindness, and they're not willing to accept it, and they're not willing to acknowledge it. You see, they're too arrogant and too haughty, and that's why he says, you are hypocrites. You should know better. And so, by the mere fact that you do not follow God, you become a blind person. You lose your eyesight. And then you cause others to follow you too, and you both fall into the same ditch. And then Peter, in verse 15, answered and said to him, explain this parable to us. And he's admitting, we too don't understand exactly what you're talking about. And look at the reply, the response of Jesus Christ. So Jesus said, are you also still without understanding? I mean, all this time? Don't you know what I'm talking about? And that's a condemnation against the disciples, the very disciples of Christ. And how many of us oftentimes fall into this category? When we should know better, but because we do not follow the lead, we do not prove all things, we do not check on those kind of things, you see, we follow in the footsteps of whatever, you know, kind of leadership we have. And we too become without understanding. It can happen also to the very servants of God. That's what he's saying here. Are you also without understanding? In other words, you shouldn't be in that category, and yet you are. Verse 17, do you not yet understand that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and is eliminated? You know, just physical thing. Even though you might eat something that may defile your body, you know, unclean food. Some people, you know, eat all kind of food that is not good for their body, and then they get a stomachache, you know, stomach poisoning or things like that. But, you know, as bad as it is, it comes out of, you know, the body. It doesn't defile the body. It doesn't remain there because the body rejects it. You see? The body knows what's good for it and what's not. That's the way God created it, and it rejects it. But, you know, we don't have that kind of smart, so to speak, to do it. And so the stomach that we ingest all kind of knowledge and understanding in our mind, our brain, it does not know how to do it, just like the physical stomach. And so he says, that's the way it is physically. That's the way God created it. But those things which proceed out of the mouth come from the heart. And they defile the man. You know, the garbage in, garbage out. That's what happens. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. What are all these? Transgression of the Torah. Because the Torah commanded us not to commit adultery, not to murder. You see, the teachings of the Torah teach us not to have evil thoughts against people, not to steal, not to blaspheme. So that's what he's talking about here. Sin is the transgression of the Torah. And when you have leaders that tell you the law is done away with, what they're telling you, that God is a liar. That's all they're saying, in their blindness and deception and ignorance and confusion. And they say that because they too were lied to, and they believed it. That's why they're all in the same ditch, blind like the leaders that they had that blinded them, and so they continue the process. And that's the way the devil works. He doesn't have to be active all the time with every single person. He picks up on a leader, you know, he infuses that leader with deception and lies and blinds that person and causes that person to be distorted in his mind and demented and perverted and warped, spiritually speaking. And then he sets him on his course, and that person goes and does the job of the devil for him. And people don't see that, don't understand that. That's why it says in Revelation, as God told John to record, that the devil, that serpent, you know, that was in the Garden of Eden, he deceives the whole world, you see. And people are blind because of that, and they don't know it. And so he said, that's the way it goes. It's from the heart that all those things proceed. And these are, in verse 16, these are the things which defile a man, but to eat with unwashed hands does not defile a man, speaking spiritually. It would defile you physically, you see, but not spiritually. And this is what counts. That does not mean that you should be a dirty, you know, dirty man or a dirty person or whatever. Because the law of God also teaches you hygiene. Be you holy, for I am holy. You cannot be filthy and appear before God. And you should not take, you know, filthy whatever, you know, and inject into your body. You're going to defile the temple of the Holy Spirit. But ultimately speaking, he said, when it comes to the defilement of the mind of man, of the nature of man, of the spirit of man, it is defiled with spiritual things, not physical things. Yet, on the other hand, you know, if you know that certain foods that God forbade us to eat, like, you know, pork, swine, ham, you know, people call it by different names, and shrimps, you know, and all kind of unclean things, and animals and things like that, if you know the law of God, and you say, I don't care, and you eat it anyway, you are going to defile not only your body, and you become unholy, but at this point, or even your mind and spirit will be defiled. So there are times that even the physical things will defile your spirit. But obviously here he's not talking about this matter. This is not the issue. The issue here is, well, you go to the market, you know, your hands get dirty. We're not talking about, you know, eating food, unclean food. So it was a different issue, you see. So I have to understand the entirety of the matter here. And then verse 21, we continue. Then Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. Now Tyre and Sidon, that's Phoenicia, today Lebanon. And there were also Jewish communities there because, you know, the Jews were spread up and down because of commerce and all kind of reasons. And obviously, it was also heavily populated by, in other words, people were not Israelites, not Jews. And the people of Tyre and Sidon basically were Phoenicians, and Phoenicians were basically the red people. That's what phonic means, red. You see, the red people, and the red people were the people of Edom, which means red, the twin brother of Jacob. So those were related, but unfortunately they departed from the law of God, just like the children of Israel, the northern kingdom. They went into idolatry and never came back to God. You see, as a nation, as a people, to this very day. Yet God is going to bring them back also. They're all children of Abraham. And at this point they're not. So they're called as Gentiles. Gentiles means nations, that's all it is. You know, there is Israel, and then all the other nations are called Gentiles. And Gentile does not mean any derogatory thing, you know. God told Abraham, I'll make you a big goy. And goy means Gentile, that means nation, that's all it means. A lot of people don't know that, and they think Gentile is a bad word. No, it's not. It just means a nation. And including Israel, Israel is also a nation, a goy. But the lingo, the biblical lingo, is Israel and the nations. And so we read here again in verse 21 that Jesus Christ is going to a region of Tyre and Sidon, where all these nations were, different, you know, different peoples, were not Israelites, but they were related. And Tyre and Sidon, the Phoenician people, the Edomites, and behold, a woman of Canaan came from the region and cried out to him. So there were Canaanites there, and there were Edomites there. The Edomites basically went up there and conquered the territory, just like the Danites did, and destroyed the people that were before them. And not all of them, but some of them still remain behind. So this woman in particular, though she's from Tyre and Sidon, she's really a Canaanite. And she's not an Israelite. So we read here, she cried to him, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed." How does she know that he's the Lord? How does she know that he's the son of David? You see, she lives among the Jewish community there. His knowledge, that is the knowledge of him and his fame, already widespread. And this is a woman that acknowledges that reality. And it's ironic. Here it is, a Canaanite woman acknowledges the fact that he's the son of David, that he's the Lord, and yet his own people, many of his own people did not. That's to their shame. Of course, many of them did, because many of them followed him and knew that he's the son of David. But just goes to show you, as Jesus Christ said earlier, a prophet is not without an honor, but in his own country, in his own house. But outsiders, you know, they seem to have more respect for that, that is for him and for his office, and his people did not. And so she has a daughter who is severely demon-possessed, and she's affected by it, and she acknowledges that. She had enough smarts and understanding to know that. And the smart and the intellectual and the intellect, you know, the men of intellect today, or wisdom and knowledge and understanding today, they poo-poo at that, you know, they make fun of it, including those who call themselves Christians. And here it is, a woman that knew better. Unfortunately, an awful lot of us have lost the understanding of what it really means today because of the deception that has been going on for a long time. In verse 23, we read, "But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, 'Send her away, for she cries out after us.'" You know, she's bugging us, you know, so to speak, in today's language, the vernacular. And they couldn't stand it anymore. But she knew who he is, she knew what he can do, and she knew what her daughter was going through. See? And she knew that the God of Israel was a merciful God, and he cared also for the entirety of the whole earth, because he's the creator of heaven and earth. And so she was not about to let go. And yet Jesus Christ, that's the way he reacts. He does not say a word. Does that mean he's rude? No, he's going to make a point here. Why? A lot of people don't understand that to this very day. "But he answered and said," to his own disciples, that is, when the saints sent her away, "I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." And so the woman hears that. And mind you, what he's saying here. Jesus Christ was not sent for the nations. He sent only to his own people, the lost sheep of the house of Israel. They are lost. As time went by, the concept of lost developed into something altogether different, which is not biblical. You know, when you're lost, that means you get lost. You know, you're now on your way to hell. You see? And that's what they think. You either believe in Christ or you're lost. Now, that's not the concept, the biblical concept. Lost means that, you know, you lost your way. You're blind. You don't know where, you know, which way you're going, you know, spiritually speaking, and yet you need to be brought back. And so God sends Jesus Christ to the lost sheep of the house of Israel and to his own people. And so that was a commission that he gave them also. Matthew 10, as we read earlier, he told them, don't go to the Samaritans, you know, you don't go to Tyre and Sidon, don't go to the nations, don't go to anybody who is not an Israelite. And that's a commission of the disciples, and that's why you find, when you read the writings of Peter, he ends up in Babylon, the center of the Jewish community there, and he writes letters to the diaspora, you see, to the dispersion, to the strangers, and that was a title that was given to the children of Israel, the northern kingdom, as well as the southern, when they went into exile, and to this very day, that's still called the diaspora. And whenever you talk about the diaspora, You see? You're talking about the children of Israel. You know, that became a part of the lingo of the people to this very day. And yet people think, well, Peter is the first pope in Rome, and he went there. You know, that's a Gentile region. He was not sent to a Gentile region, even though there was a little Jewish community there. But Paul was the one that dealt with them, and Paul made it very plain. He never did a work, generally speaking, and didn't build a foundation where others have already labored. So Peter wasn't there. If he ever came there to visit the Jewish community, that's one thing. But Peter, the Bible never tells us anything about him being in Rome. He was not the apostle to the uncircumcision. He was the apostle to the circumcision. That was his ministry, and Paul made it very plain. It was Paul who went to the uncircumcision as well as to the circumcision. And yet to this very day, people believe this lie. And they created in their own mind, you know, a doctrine and a theology that is all based on lies, that there is a line of succession, you know, of Peter's, you see. And people follow that lie to this very day. And that's what Christ was saying, you know, in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of man, you know. And when people are blind, they follow the blind, they all fall into the same ditch. And they don't even know it. And that's what he's saying here very plainly. I am sent to the house of Israel, to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And when he sent his disciples, even at the end of Matthew, go therefore into all the world, preach the gospel unto everyone, teach all nations to observe all things. You see, the children of Israel were widespread. They were all over the place. They were spread among many nations. And so they went and preached to the children of Israel, and the Gentiles among them, if they wanted to listen to respond, well, God had mercy on them too. But there were only sprinklings of them, that is. They were not, he was not calling nations, no more than he was calling his own people, Israel, as a nation. And again, to this very day, the deception goes on. And there is no knowledge nor understanding there among the majority who call themselves Christians, be it the leadership or the people. So Christ made it very plain. His commission is only for his wife. This is not the time for him to set his hand to deliver all the nations from their blindness and ignorance. And it hasn't been for the past 2,000 years, and not until his coming, when he comes to reign over the house of Jacob, sit on the throne of David, marry Israel, make a new marriage covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah, then the children will come, which will be the nations of the earth. And only then, he said, that the nations will be called by his name. Not before that. What came before that was a total deception and lie, and people are living a lie to this very day, thinking that, well, we are part of the Gentile church. That's why, you know, we don't have that law, the Jewish law, and the Jewish Sabbath, and the Jewish holidays, and so forth. You see? People to this very day don't understand that the devil has deceived the whole world, and they are in it. They are a part of it. Christ made it very plain from the beginning until the end that it is between him and his wife Israel. Until that is taken care of and restored, there aren't going to be any nations joining this relationship, because they're going to be the children. And so he makes it very plain. When a Canaanite, a Gentile, comes to him, he makes it very plain, I'm not sent to you. That's not my commission. Does that mean that God is not merciful? No. What it means is that first he has to make that point clear, and then after that he had mercy on her once she understood it, and she did. Verse 25, then she came and worshipped him. You see, you don't worship a man, you worship a deity, a divine being. And she knew that. She knew that he's Adon, called him Adon, or Lord, Son of David, and the Messiah, the Deliverer, the King of Israel. You see, there was still knowledge even among the Gentiles. That's because they got it from the Jewish community, which still retained that knowledge and understanding that there are two divine beings. One is the Father, the El Elyon, and the other one is his Son. He's the Messiah, the King of Israel, who married them in Sinai, is going to marry them again. And as time went by, you know, that knowledge was totally lost, and the Jewish community developed this concept, which is rabbinic and not biblical, that there is only one divine being, period. And then Islam, when it came along, you know, they learned the same thing, and they too believe in the same thing. They're all, you know, in the ditch, following blind leaders, thinking that they know the truth. So Christ made it very plain. This Gentile woman understood it, and so she came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me, Adon. See, yeah, I know that you are sent to the house of Israel, but God always showed mercy to the nations too. A little bit here and there, like Naaman, who was healed by Elisha. You see, he was not an Israelite. He was from Syria, from that very region where she is now. And God had mercy on them. You see? And so she's pleading with him. After all, God created all mankind, and he cares for all of them. So she says, Lord, help me. She was not about to debate and argue or get offended. She did not get offended at that. She knew the reality. God is the God of Israel, not the God of the nations. But he answered and said, it is not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the little dogs. You know, some call it to the puppies. You know, just like people, you know, they have some food on the table. You know, the little puppies are all around, the little dogs, and they just take some crumbs and throw it to them. And he's again making a point here, not only for her to hear and to know, but also for all those who are going to read it later on. That God does not take the food that he gave to Israel, the children of the kingdom, and gives it to the whole world. Not at this point. Later on, Israel, when they return to him, they will do their job to be a light to the nations, and then they will take all the food, not just crumbs, and give it to the entirety of mankind to eat also. That is, teach them the Torah, as it says, for out of Zion shall the word go forth, and the Torah shall proceed from Jerusalem. That's what it means. That comes in the future. So again, he makes the same point. And she does not get offended. She understands that too. And she said, yes, Lord, yeah, I agree with that. Yet even the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from the master's table. You know, it's true as it is, she said, but you know, all those Gentiles that live around, just like all the slaves and the servants that Israelites had who were of the nations, they too partook of the blessings of Israel. You see, and you too, I mean, you, Jesus Christ made it very plain in Sinai that the Israelites should have compassion and mercy on the strangers and care for them if they are willing to walk in the faith of God. They should have one law and be partakers of the same blessings. So this is a woman that is not ignorant. She obviously was going to the synagogue, you know, sitting on the outside there, obviously couldn't go inside, and listening and knowing enough of the religion of Israel to know this matters. And so there's no offense there, and she did not feel offended. There was nothing that was done there that was wrong. A lot of people having no knowledge and understanding, they don't realize what's happening here. And the thing that Christ was offensive here and rude, and it's not. Unless you have the background, obviously you're not going to understand what you're reading. And this woman understood the background, though she was a Canaanite, yet she lived in among the children of Israel, and she had enough knowledge and understanding of the law. And so in the spirit of humility and meekness, she came to him. And that's what she says here. And then Jesus answered and said to her, O woman, great is your faith. Her faith came by the mere fact that she knew the word of God, and to the not only knowing the word of God, this woman probably even was obeying whatever she understood. Or else she wouldn't come. You know, if she was a pagan, idol worshiper, she would know. You cannot come to God, you know, as an idol worshiper, as a pagan, you know, doing your own thing, and be accepted by him. Unless you're willing to go in his direction, just like many strangers did, you know, when they went to the temple. They couldn't go inside, but, you know, they were outside listening. And they show humility, like the centurion, the Roman centurion, you know, where he would go to the temple, the synagogue at least, maybe probably even went to the temple now and then, outside to the court of the Gentiles. So, unless you understand the background, what's really going on here, you know, behind the scenes, you would not really understand what you're reading. So it's important to always investigate and look deeply into it and understand what is really happening here. You cannot read the facade of it and think that you have an understanding. And so Christ says, it's your faith, and your faith is great. And let it be to you as you desire. You see? So if there is faith there, and faith has to come by hearing of the word, that means she heard the word before that as she was going to the synagogue and listening to the teachings of the Jewish community. And that's why she could go to him. And so when he came, she knew who he was. She knew that he's the son of David. Where did she hear that? And it's very important for us, you know, when we read this kind of matters, to search the background to understand, so we can understand the context, what's happening here, and have the proper kind of understanding. And this woman, you know, is not in a vacuum, coming out of the blue and saying those kind of things. And he's not going to tell her, you know, your great faith has delivered you. Obviously, there's an awful lot behind the scenes here that needs to be considered. And so the outcome of that, we read, and her daughter was healed from that very hour. And we have many other stories throughout the entirety of the Bible of Gentiles, not Israelites, that had a measure of faith. You know, they heard the law of God, they They were reading it like the eunuch that we read about later on in the book of Acts, that Philip had baptized a person that would come to the temple of God. Here it is, he's an Ethiopian, and he comes and he's holding the book of Isaiah in his hands and he's reading it. So there is an awful lot of background there, and that's how we should understand it. And so after that, we read in verse 21, Jesus departed from there and skirted the Sea of Galilee, that means went around it, and went up on the mountain and sat down there. And for whatever reason, you know, he did not want to go through certain towns around the Sea of Galilee. But he went to that certain place on a mountain and sat there. And obviously, people all around heard about it. He's coming. They knew where he was. And so they went up there by the multitudes, children of Israel, who were in deep trouble in one way or the other by the Romans, you know, economic afflictions, sickness and disease. And they were not haughty and arrogant. They were not like the Pharisees. So they came to hear because they needed help. They needed salvation. They needed light. They needed hope. And so they came by the multitudes, many of them, all Jews, all followed him, you see. And had it not been for what happened later on in terms of the crucifixion, you know, they still would have been there with him. But things turned differently because the devil was involved there, you know, and people who were not of a good conscience were involved in it, unfortunately. And so as time went by, all these multitudes and their descendants that could have been constantly followers of Christ became otherwise. And yet the time is coming when Christ is going to restore all of his people back to himself. And that's why he told them before the crucifixion, he said, as he was walking toward the side of the cross, he said to the women of Israel that were weeping for him, and to all of Israel there, he said, you know, you would not see me again until you are all, you know, as a nation, as a city, as a people, ready to say, blessed be he that comes in the name of the Lord. So the story is not over. Even though the ignoramuses thought, well, that was it. That's the end of it. You know, now God, you know, forgot all about you, got rid of you, now he chose us, we're the Gentile church, we're his people. Well, again, these are children of darkness. And they will continue to be that way until God opens their eyes, because to begin with, most of them do not know their right from their left, and they don't realize where they are walking. And God will have mercy on them at the same time. And then great multitudes, we read in verse 30, came to him, right on top of that mountain, having with them the lame, blind, mute, maimed, and many others, you know, all kind of sicknesses. And they laid them down at Jesus' feet, and he healed them. So they came to him by faith. They were men of Judah, you see, men of God, a part of the bride of Jesus Christ, obedient to the law of God to one degree or the other, you see, men who humbled themselves, who had faith, and so they came, and he responded, and he healed them. Every single one of them. He didn't say just some of them. So the multitude marveled when they saw the mute speaking, the maimed made whole, the lame walking, and the blind seeing, and they glorified the God of Israel, speaking about the El Elyon, the Most High, who sent his Son. You see, of course, at this time they don't fully comprehend, you know, this relationship, Father and Son, in its fullness, that would come later on. But they understood this is the Son of God, this is the Messiah. Because after all, in Psalm 2, he spoke about his Son, you see, the Son of God. And of course, to this very day, the Jews, because they were blinded when they rejected totally, and the rabbis, you know, being blind themselves, pass on this ignorance to this very day, just like, you know, the deceivers among those who call themselves, you know, Christians, they do the same. And so it is in every given religion. But at the time, they knew. You see, it's still to this, you know, to that very, very moment, and who knows for how long, even after the death of Christ, is still understood the knowledge and the understanding of the El Elyon, the Most High, who sent his Son, who is also a deity, who was the God of Israel. And so they glorify the God of Israel. You don't see people here who reject Jesus Christ, or reject his divinity, or reject, you know, his commission, you see, just the opposite. So what happened in between should not confuse people to think that the Jews, you know, never accepted him or rejected him. We're talking about the elite, the group that were at the top, that were hypocrites, that knew better, And because they didn't want to lose their power, that's all they cared about. You see, that blinded their eyes and their hearts to understand what they're really doing. As Peter on later on, you know, would say to the leaders of Israel, I know that you and your leaders, speaking but, you know, to the people, have done it in ignorance. You see, so many of them were ignorant, and others were just guilty as they could be. And you cannot, you know, paint all of them one broad brush and say, you know, all of them rejected Jesus Christ. So again, you know, when you read all these kind of statements, you have to investigate the background and see the whole picture. People don't do it. These people of God, the people of Jesus Christ, his wife, glorified his father. You see, and they were glorifying him too. Now Jesus called his disciples to himself and said, I have compassion on the multitude. See, the multitude is his wife, his people, because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. And I do not want to send them away hungry, lest they faint on the way. Now, this is the second time. Then his disciples said to him, where could we get enough bread in the wilderness to fill such a great multitude? You know, they just forgot about the first miracle. And instead of asking Christ, well, okay, what do you want us to do? You know, whatever you say, we'll do. They too were lacking faith, and they did not remember what happened before that. And Jesus said to them, how many loaves do you have? And they said, seven, and a few little fish. So he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground, you see. And they did. They didn't want again, you know, to have a confusion there and fighting, you know, bread line. You know, people are hungry, you know, they begin to behave like a little wild animals sometimes and get unruly. And so he said, let them all sit down, command them to sit down. So they obeyed. See, you have faith because you obey. And you obey, you have faith. And the two go together. And then come the blessing of God. And so he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground, and he took the seven loaves and the fish, and gave thanks. You know, as we mentioned that earlier, that the custom, it's still there in the Jewish community to this very day, and Israel used to do that too. That was the knowledge that they received from Sinai. And before that, how to give thanks God. You know, you take the bread, you hold it with your hands, they generally take two, and look up to heaven and give God thanks, and only after they finish eating, as God commanded Moses to tell Israel, you read in Deuteronomy chapter 10, when you are filled, you see, when you have eaten and you are full, then you shall bless the Lord your God. And so it is to this very day. First, they give thanks to God by raising up, you know, the loaves toward God in their eyes. And after that, at the end of the meal, they give thanks to God. That's when the long blessings, as they call it in Hebrew, Birkat HaMazon, the blessing of the food, comes. And those who still know the knowledge of God to this very day, they do it. Others, you know, they just do their own thing. In the beginning, they give thanks to God and forget about it at the end. Sincere people, but to this very day, you see, people that do not know the law of God, and they just do whatever they do based on their understanding, and not the law of God. And so that's what he did here. After he gave thanks, he broke them and gave them to his disciple. You see, that was a part of the custom. And the breaking of the bread itself symbolized the, you know, his own body. And so when he said, you know, take it, this is my body which is broken for you, that was not something new. You see, from the beginning of time to this very day, you go to the Middle East, you see how they, you know, they take bread and they break it and divide it among others. And in the Jewish community, in the community of Israel, that was a part of the eating ceremony. You see, breaking a piece of bread and then you share it with others. And that's the reason why he also used that terminology. Take, eat, this is my body. You know, first, you know, he broke it. And so when people eat, every time they eat, you see, every time you eat, you take the bread and you break it. And he says, as often as you do it in remembrance of me. So every time you break bread, that's why the terminology, break bread, remember the symbolism behind it. You see? And people, you know, miss it, you know, when they just read over it without understanding what's really going on here. And so he broke it according to the custom and gave it to all of them and fed them. And he told them, spiritually speaking, unless you eat my bread, you know, after it's broken for you and you eat it, either, you know, physically or spiritually, You see? You are not going to have any life in you. And so that's what he did here. And he gave it to his disciples, and the disciples gave it to the multitude. So you see order there. You see, the essence of truth comes directly from God. From God it goes to his disciples, the leadership, you know, the ministry. And from the ministry, all the teachers, it goes to the brethren. It doesn't mean, you know, that people cannot just, you know, go directly and read the Bible. You see, that's not what it's talking about here. But here, the order was such that Christ would do the blessings, he would do the breaking, he would give it to the disciples, and they gave it to the people. They didn't go directly to Jesus Christ. So obviously, you know, if you find the, you know, you can see the spiritual connotation here. You know, there is a time where you go directly to God, and there is a time where you go in this order. And then we read in verse 37, so they all ate and were filled. And they took up 7 large baskets full of the fragments that were left. Now those who ate were 4,000 men beside women and children. And so all of those people that were there, you know, there's a big group. The first time we read about it, there was another big group there too. And God is not limited, and he can do all these things. And so, again, people that took off, left their jobs, left their homes, left their cities, took with them their wives and their children, and followed him. Many of them came because they needed healing, others because they needed spiritual healing, and they were thirsty. And all of them were being blessed. So those who hunger and thirst for righteousness' sake shall be filled. And these people were filled, both physically and spiritually. In verse 39, and he sent away the multitude. And he sent away the multitude, we read here, got into the boat and came to the region of Magdala. Or Magdalene, or Migdal. Migdal means tower. So there was a place there that was called a tower. And this is where he went. And then we read in chapter 16 and verse 1, then the Pharisees and Sadducees came and testing him, you know, they didn't come to really know the truth. They weren't coming like the multitude before that, hungering and thirsting for righteousness. And they were filled because of that. Well, these Pharisees and Sadducees, in other words, some of the leadership, that is the leaders of the people of Israel in terms of those who were in Jerusalem and other places, not necessarily that everybody followed them and their teachings. But there were the people in charge. Well, they came not because seeking the truth, but they wanted to put down the competition, so to speak. And so they came testing him, asked him that he would show them a sign from heaven. You know, you claim to be this and that. And look at the kind of thinking that people like that have. I mean, here it is, he performed the signs and wonders. He performed miracles. He healed all the sick. They couldn't do that. And yet they want a sign from heaven. Now that doesn't make sense. And yet that shows you how perverted and demented human beings can be, especially those in leadership in any given religion. That's the way they are. They do not have eyes to see and to admit and to be humble about it. And so they want to challenge you. And he answered and said to them, when it is evening, you say, it will be fair weather. So, in other words, you're not that stupid. You understand, you comprehend. For the sky is red, and in the morning it will be foul weather. Today, for the sky is red and threatening. Hypocrites! You see, he put them right on the spot where they are, and he pinpointed their problem. You know how to discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. And they should have. Because they knew very well the prophecies about his coming. You see, they knew the times in which they lived. And that was their problem. They were hypocrites. You see, the other people were not. They acknowledged it. And when he appeared on the scene, they knew it. The whole community knew about that. Just like when he was born. At that time, Herod asked the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and all the people that should have known, but the time of his coming, the time of the Messiah, the deliverer, and they told him exactly, you see. So there was no reason for them to be hypocrites so that when he shows up on the scene and he does all those kind of things, for them to come and play games with him. And that's why he told them, that's your problem. You're playing hypocrites, and that's the reason why you're doing what you're doing. And he said, you know how to discern the face of the sky, but you cannot discern the signs of the times. A wicked and an adulterous generation seeks after the sign, and he's speaking about them, you see, while the others, they came and followed in the great multitudes, and that was the majority of the nation. So he's not necessarily talking about the entirety of the people there, you see, but he's speaking in specific about them, the leaders. And he said, that kind of people you are, wicked, in other words, you're not obedient to the law of God as you should, and then you're adulterous. That means, you know, you're following your own idol worship, your own ideas, your own concepts. And so a generation like that, you seek a sign. You have no faith. That's why you seek for a sign. And he said, no sign shall be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. And he left them and departed. And, you know, if you know the story about Jonah, he was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the fish. He was not totally dead. And so that would have ramifications about this statement that he gave them too. And later on, when we come to that, we'll cover more details about it. And then in verse 5 we read, now when his disciples had come to the other side, they had forgotten to take bread. Then Jesus said to them, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Instead of understanding that he's speaking about spiritual matters, they reasoned among themselves, saying, verse 7, it is because we have taken no bread. And so Jesus was going to reprimand them based on that because they had a problem. They forgot, too, his ability to perform signs and wonders. If they are hungry, there is no food to care for them. And so in verse 8 we read, but Jesus said, but Jesus being aware of it, say to them, all you of little faith, that's his own disciples, why do you reason among yourselves because you have brought no bread? Do you not understand or remember the 5 loaves of the 5,000 and how many baskets you took up, as we read earlier in chapter 14? And all the 7 loaves of the 4,000 that just happened and how many large baskets you took up? How is it that you do not understand that I did not speak to you concerning bread, but to beware of the leaven, that is the spiritual leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, their teachings. You see, as long as they taught you the law of Moses, that was not an issue. But when they were teaching you their own things which are contrary, he said, this is what you should be aware of. And that's exactly what he told all those who were going to follow him for the next 2,000 years until his coming. As you read later on in Matthew 24, he said, what you should really be aware of, they were asking him about the temple and when all those events are going to happen, the destruction. He says the first thing you should be aware of the reality that many shall come in my name and shall say that I am the Christ and they shall deceive many. So he's telling all who are going to follow him, be, you know, wary of the leaven of those kind of people who are going to deceive you. You see, in this case, in particular, he says to them about the Sadducees and the Pharisees. But this is a warning to all of us, to always be mindful and watch out and prove all things and not believe just anything and anybody and anyone, regardless of how sincere they may be, or how credible they may seem to be in our own sight, or how good people otherwise they may be. Then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of the bread, but of the doctrine, that is the teaching, of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. And those who were not, well, they fell by the wayside, unfortunately. And those who still are to this very day are of that nature. They follow just anybody just because he holds the Bible and he says, I'm a minister of Christ. Or because if you are in the Jewish community, you know, he's a rabbi. You see, that doesn't mean anything. You have to compare what they say with what the Word of God really says. And based on that, you would know. Otherwise, you'll fall for it. And when Jesus came into the region of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, saying, whom do men say that I am, the Son of Man? That is, you know, whom do men say that I, the Son of Man, am? So they said, some say John the Baptist, some Elijah, and others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. Why would they be so confused? How can it be Jeremiah? Jeremiah is dead. Or Elijah? He's dead too. Or John the Baptist? He's dead too. Why would people say these kind of things like that? Because if they studied the Word of God, they wouldn't be deceived. They would know. And at the time, it was not, that is, the concept of the heaven and hell was not taught in the Jewish community. That came much later on. What the new is that, you know, some people are being resurrected now and then. They've, you know, witnessed that several times. Elisha himself, you know, resurrected a person. And, you know, that's the only thing that could be possible. But, you know, when people are given to superstition instead of the knowledge of God, they obviously get confused. And so each one of them had his own idea, his own concept, just like they do today. You know, they all invent their own knowledge and understanding, and they have convictions, and they believe that's the truth. And that's, in essence, what was going on there. But Jesus Christ wanted to know what is it that his disciples believed, because that was the most important about this matter, not what the people, you know, their superstitions believed. And so he asked them, and what is it that you say that I am? What's your understanding? And Simon Peter answered and said, you are the Christ, you are the Messiah, you are the Anointed One, you are the Son of God, you know. You are the Son of the living God, that means you are God. And this knowledge that he was God and that he had a father, that is El Elyon, was still prevalent at the time, and gradually it departed from the majority, but some of them still had a relationship with God and had the faith of God, had this knowledge and understanding. Anyway, we'll stop at this point. Again, this is Mordecai Joseph. Greetings to all of God's people. Until the next lesson.